Welcome to the Whole and Healthy Vibe podcast, a show to help you shift away from the diet and dogma towards a whole and healthy life.
We're your hosts, Laura and Kezia, health coaches, cake lovers, and body positive warriors. Let's get the show started. Welcome to the Whole and Healthy Live podcast. This is season two, and we are very excited to be back. This podcast used to be the Happy Health Chat podcast, but we've rebranded and renamed, and we are now coming back to you for the next season of some awesome healthy living information coming into your ears. This is exciting, isn't it, Laura?
It is. I know it's been a long time since we recorded a podcast. We were just reminiscing.
Ages.
Ages and ages. We were just reminiscing. And obviously we wanted to kind of share a little bit about why the podcast just dropped off the planet. But we had some good reasons for that. So our last, if you look in iTunes and stuff, you'll see that our last podcast was recorded in March in 2016, and you'll be listening to this in 2017, which is crazy that the year's gone so fast. So we recorded that. Kezia has been off on travels, which I'm sure she will fill us in on, and we've had lots of other bits of work to do, lots of things keeping our time busy, so we kind of knew that we wanted to revisit the podcast, but we kind of felt that it needed to be have a different name and a different feel, and also kind of to encapsulate a lot of the work that we're going to be doing now, which we'll kind of start sharing with you very soon, which you might kind of get a bit of a gist, but because we're called Whole and Healthy Live.
Yeah, the live part.
The
being...
live part being the...
Yeah, the important
the word.
Part. Yeah. So we're going to have some really exciting events. Me and Laura have been kind of doing a lot of brainstorming. Mm-hmm. So we're going to share more about that throughout this episode and more episodes to come. But we're really excited to have you guys back. So make sure you subscribe on your iPhones or whatever device you use for this. And also leave us a review if you like our podcast on iTunes. That would be awesome.
Yes, we'd love you forever if you could leave us a review. That would be awesome.
Yeah, it's fun to read them. But for those of you that are maybe new to this podcast, we should probably introduce ourselves. So I'm Kezia Hall. I run a business called Supernaturally Healthy, and I'm a health coach. And that's kind of, I spend a lot of my time at Supernaturally Healthy and do all that sort of fun business stuff and food stuff and all of that kind of thing. I'm based in Scotland, so nice and sunny up north.
she says ironically.
Yeah, ironically, yeah. If you're listening in this from California, it is not actually sunny or hot. So that's a little bit about me. I've been running my business for about 2 years. And me and Laura when did we connect, Laura? It was probably like 2 or 3 years ago, wasn't it?
It was, yeah. I think we just kind of like came across each other, didn't we? And it was just like, there's another crazy health coach woman.
Yeah,
who we can get on with.
Let's make friends.
And the weird thing is, I mean, like, Kezia and I have actually got some really weird kind of similarities and coincidences. Like, she used to, so I might as well introduce myself probably. So I'm Laura Agar Wilson. My business is Wholeheartedly Healthy. You can find me at wholeheartedlyhealthy.com. And same as Kezia, I'm a health coach, doing all the kind of your food stuff, mindset stuff, self-love, self-care, kind of information that I share over there and on social media. I live in Durham in the northeast of England, so that's not far from Newcastle, which is where Kezia used to, well, where Kezia is from originally, Newcastle. So we've got that in common. So we just kind of got lots of similarities, and we do.
Yeah,
and we're just a very good match, I think, as anyone who has seen us together in person will attest to. And the kind of weird thing is as well, I think before like 2016, we'd talked so much on Skype, but then we never actually met in person until the start of 2016.
Which was
really weird but awesome that we actually got to see each other properly in real life.
Yeah,
not just on a screen.
No, that was fun. That was a start, because I was telling my friends, I think I was telling my sister, and I was like, oh, I'm going to see my friend. She's like, oh, when did you last see her? I was like, well, technically, I saw her just the other week on Skype, but I've never actually like given her a hug, which is always really important. So, look, there's been probably a good couple of months, 9 or 10 months since our last episode. So, what the heck's been going on in the world of Laura?
Oh, in the world of me. So, well, I know we're going to talk about our retreat that we mm-hmm. held. So we'll come on to that in a minute. So that was obviously a big thing. So I think that when the last episode was recorded, I had just moved house, which mm-hmm. was a really big deal for me. If you do care to go back and listen to some of the old episodes, like the fact that I was stuck in a one bedroom flat with a baby. Or, you know, I've just realised I forgot like one of the biggest parts of my life that I just didn't share, which is I've got a little boy. Oh my god, oh guilt, mother guilt alert now. Yeah, I've got a little boy called Finley, who's two
and very my cute. Word,
yeah, he is very very cute. I should have mentioned that when I did my intro. Oh, no, I feel really bad, right. I just I completely mention forgot. My husband. So yeah, so I've got a little boy called Finley, and he's just over, he's 2 years and 3 months old, something like that now. That makes me sound so bad. I'm so offhand with him. He's,
no, I think that just makes you sound like a normal mother. Like a normal mother. Like, sleep yeah. deprived and yes. trying to remember which day's what.
Yeah, so we'd been living in a one-bedroom flat and that had been really hard and we'd just moved. So that's been a really big thing. And then it's kind of, I mean, I guess for me, I finished writing a book. So there's a book out in March 2017, which is called Coconut Oil 1001 Uses. You can imagine how fun that was to write, guys. So called 1001 Uses of Coconut Oil. So that's cool that that's out. And yeah, I think it was just kind of just all kinds of awesome. Oh yeah, I won an award. I've nearly forgot about that. I won I won Blogger of the Year at the British Health Journalism Awards, which was really, really cool because I didn't think I had a cat in hell's chance of winning that. But I was nominated and I won, and I went down to London to a nice swanky event. And yeah, I won, so that was really, really cool.
That was cool.
Yeah, so I think that's pretty much been me for the last few months, but all good stuff. And how about you, Kezia? Tell us about your travels.
Yeah, well, I May 2016, me and my other half, Joe, we schooled off for about 10 weeks, which was kind of a bit of a dream come true. We'd been thinking about doing it for a while, but kind of traveling around the world and leaving your jobs is never really there's never a good time to do that. So we just kind of took the plunge and we went to Asia. So we went to Thailand, had friends in Thailand, Cambodia, Australia, Malaysia, Bali, a whole host of different places. So it was super, super fun. It was really fun to just, because I'd always had this idea of, like, you know, living the dream of like running a business and being able to do that wherever you are. And I didn't work like a lot while I was away. I'm not going to lie. It's not like I was working every day. It was did a lot of yoga and a lot of coffee drinking mainly and sightseeing around temples. But it was really fun to go and do that. And it was just nice to have a bit of an adventure and get away and meet different people and make new friends. So that was really fun. So we got back in start of July, I think it was. So that was a real, real adventure. Although I was so glad to come home. I think I chatted to you, Laura, when I got back and I was like, I'm so happy to be like in my own bed and not be like sweating buckets by just like walking 3 steps. And made me think I love living in Scotland even more. Not that I loved being away, but it was so nice to just come home and be really fond of where I am right now. So that was really fun. And also I decided, just in case my life wasn't busy enough, I decided to start a master's as well when I got back. So that's started in September, but I had some stuff to do over the summer. So that's another exciting part of, I suppose, my kind of news of doing things. And I'm about to get my kitchen renovated. That's my latest
That's
news.
So exciting. Yeah, that's really exciting.
Yeah. So actually, by the time this goes live, my kitchen will be renovated and done. Like, I know, I can't wait for the end result, but the whole, like, 2-week process of, like, drilling and mess and dust, I'm not as looking forward to, especially because I work from home. I was like, oh, this could be interesting, but the end result will be awesome. I think I'm going to do, like, just a couple of, like, videos for YouTube, like, just
You to, should do, definitely, show
just
off.
Like, welcome to Kezia's Kitchen. I'm going to show you how to make some truffles. Which would be fun, but I think that's pretty much all of my big news. I'm still working on Joe to get a dog. I really want a dog, but
I didn't know that. Wow. Oh, that'd be lovely.
I've wanted a dog for ages, but I live in a flat and my husband is like, no, I think that's a dream that will never happen. But you know,
I wanted a dog for, well, I was basically told I can have a dog or a child, and I've got the child. So the kind of like the dog was the runner up prize, which is, but I would love a little dog just to keep me company at home.
Well, and my own. That's why my sister said, Kezia, you should have a child first, and then if you can handle a dog, then have a dog. I was like, it's probably wise.
Yeah,
but we'll see.
Oh, but we did something, as we mentioned, we did something really exciting and just fabulous in September, which was hold our first retreat. So we did talk about that on the last podcast as we were kind of getting geared up to hold it. So we did that in September. We had the most lovely group of amazing women join us in a fabulous cottage in the Lake District. And it was so beautiful, the location was absolutely stunning, wasn't it? It was just, really gorgeous. And I think it's, you know, it's good to say it was an absolute success. I think the women who came had a really transformative time, really enjoyed themselves, really got out of it what they felt that they needed, and which has just inspired us to basically do more. Yeah. I think, and we both really enjoyed actually the whole process of us doing it. And I think considering it was our first retreat, it went off so well. So we're really, and hence why we've kind of rebranded as Whole and Healthy Life, because we see, I think we just kind of see ourselves doing more of those kind of retreats. Yeah. And we're also going to be telling you about a little bit later on in the podcast about our first day event, which is so exciting. And we'll talk to you about that later on in the show. So that's kind of where Whole and Healthy Live has come from. This is why we felt this move to kind of just really, I suppose it's just kind of consolidate what we're about.
Yeah.
And I think Happy Health Chat just didn't really communicate what it was that we're about now. And I think we've got a much clearer idea of what we want to share with you guys through the podcast and what you want to share via live events and things as well. So it's a very exciting time.
Yeah, and for in terms of finding out a little bit more, we now have a website up as well, which is wholehealthylive.com. And so that we're going to be planning on some more retreats in 2017. So make sure you head there to check out those dates. And obviously, we'll talk about it more on the podcast as well. But we're hoping to probably run 2 retreats possibly this year. And all the information on that and on the day event will be up on the website. So make sure you check it out there and join the little newsletter list on there, because then you'll be the first to find out all the fun stuff that we are doing, as well as get a monthly little email in your inbox with all the stuff that me and Laura have been up to with Whole and Healthy Lives. To celebrate the podcast being back, we are hosting a live launch party. What we're going to be doing is looking at the foundations of a whole and healthy life. So we're going to be kicking off on Tuesday, the 7th of February at 8 p.m. and just head to wholehealthylife.com/party to save your space.
Well, for this kind of first episode back, we wanted to touch on quite a big topic that doesn't usually, well, I don't think it gets enough attention when it comes to the whole healthy living scene and the discussions that you see going on online or in magazines and papers, and that's mindset. And it's really quite a passion of mine, I think, mindset, because the more that work that, and I don't know if this is the same for you, Kezia, but the more work that I do with women, so we're both coaches, so we both coach people one-to-one and group programs and things like that as well. But one of the biggest things that I've noticed is, like, food isn't really that, it's actually the thing that's more important is mindset. And we get, most of us kind of get really focused on what we eat and how we exercise and all that kind of stuff, but we don't really address the mindset things that are holding us back. So I think that can be a really tricky, you know, it's tricky, because if we don't address those things, then it doesn't matter how much kale you eat. Like, if you're gonna be triggered and like end up overeating, it's gonna undo all that good work.
Yeah.
So that's kind of where, like, why I'm really passionate about mindset. What are your kind of, I mean, we wanted to talk first about kind of what's an unhealthy mindset, so you can kind of see the difference. So when it comes to an unhealthy mindset, what would you kind of characterize that as?
Oh, well, I think it can look like lots of different things. And I think you're right. I see it with my one-to-one clients often. That there's a couple of key kind of behaviors. I think the best way to see if your mindset is off is to look at your consistent behavior and your consistent thought patterns about yourself, your body and your food, there's, you know, not, those aren't the only things, but those are the easiest things probably. Mm-hmm. And looking at, is there specific behaviors or thought patterns that go through your brain that are kind of well embedded in? And I think, so for example, so for me, my mind, one embedded kind of thought pattern that I had consistently was I was always comparing what I was eating to what other people were eating. So say I started at school and lunch break, it was like, oh, my friend so-and-so's not only eating half a sandwich, she's not eating all of a sandwich, maybe I should only eat half of my sandwich, because otherwise if I eat all my packed lunch, she's gonna think I'm a big fat whale.
Yeah.
And think, well, that's why Kezia is so fat, because she eats her whole sandwich. And I know saying out loud now it sounds ridiculous, but I know lots of people, mm-hmm. lots of women think, mm-hmm. in that kind of way. Or in the social setting now as an adult, I can sometimes find myself being like, oh, I'm not gonna have that extra helping of curry or bolognese or cake, mm-hmm. or whatever, because people will be like, oh, well, that's why her butt's not a size 8, because she's having second helping, you know, is, mm-hmm. that. And that, I think, can sometimes be a bit of a trigger. I think, and the obvious ones as well, are like binge eating. If, mm-hmm. you find you're binging, and by that, it's that kind of, you feel out of control in what you're eating, and you, mm-hmm. just need to eat as much as you possibly can in a short space amount of time until you often make yourself sick, or at least feel sick, mm-hmm. Even if you don't actually kind of do the final purge of making yourself vomit itself. I think that's a very common fruit of an off mindset, mm-hmm. and I think also just low, like poor self-talk about your body, mm. as well, like about your physical body. I think you really struggle to have a healthy mindset if you refuse to love your body where it is, mm-hmm. right now. And I think a lot of women, and I know from my own story, I would just have a lot of negative self-talk about my love handles and my face and my teeth and my, mm-hmm. you know, stretch, yeah. marks, puberty, or like, you know, all of that sort of stuff. And I think those are often, there's loads of them, but those are a couple of common, mm-hmm. ones I come across a lot. What are the kind of behaviors or patterns that you come across a lot in the women you coach, Laura?
I think a lot of it for a lot of it that I see is the all or nothing mentality.
So good.
The whole, and I think a lot of it, and I mean, I'll talk a little bit about kind of the approaches and stuff for kind of improving your mindset, but for me some of it comes back to identifying things like patterns where they've come from. But a lot of them, you know, most of us women I think have dieted at some point in our lives, and I think it can be so destructive, mm. towards your mindset, because it not only puts into your mind this whole concept of good and bad foods, but also this all or nothing thing that, and I think what it's characterized by is, it's that whole, oh, I'll start again on Monday thing, or,
yeah.
you know, oh, well, I've had that biscuit, now I've, like, you know, screwed up, I'm just going to eat everything that's in the house now. It's, yeah. It's those kind of patterns that I see, that really would flag up to me that there's some work that you can do on your mindset. And definitely totally agree with, like, the negative self-talk. The more that, I was just thinking about this the other day, actually, I think the more that I see, you know, kind of like, see feedback from women and, you know, in the different groups that I've got and things like that, it's, like, self-love and self-worth is really the foundation,
mm-hmm.
to so much, because I think when you've got that there, it changes your relationship with all these other things, like going forward. And that in itself is kind of like a mindset thing that holds you back.
Yeah.
So it's so worth doing, like, you know, considering what your mindset is and considering what ways to improve it, because I think it's can have such a massive difference on your life when you do, yeah. actually start and do the work. And I'm trying to think of some other kind of negative, like the poor mindset kind of things. Definitely all or nothing. I think as well, kind of the guilt.
Yeah.
I think whenever you're feeling kind of guilty around something that you've eaten or the amount that you've eaten, again, that's really like a red flag that your mindset's probably not where it, you know, as good as it could be. I suppose some women are probably listening to this thinking, like, I can't imagine a life where I could have something that is, you know, that I currently deem as being a bad food and not feel guilty about it. But,
mm-hmm.
like, I think I felt like that, like, a few years ago. But now, I just don't think I ever feel guilty about anything I eat. It doesn't even process for me now. I just think, well,
yeah,
it just doesn't even process. And I think that's because I have, like, looked at what was going on. So I definitely think guilt's a big one.
That is a big one. And I think probably what you've just said for a lot of listeners, they're like, what? Never, ever feel guilty about anything that you eat. But I think that is actually what we're kind of fighting for with shifting our mindset. Because why should we feel guilty about the food we eat? Why should I feel guilty about eating a piece of chocolate fudge cake and somehow not feel guilty about a green smoothie? Like, it's just so weird. Like, we've been taught that some foods have this bad connotations and some food have good, like, it just gets very messy, as opposed to just like, I'm just going to eat some food because I want to enjoy it. And I think all that guilt often adds just a lot more noise, and it's quite draining, because you end up just constantly thinking about yourself in a way, and about how guilty you are, and how rubbish you are, or how you've messed up again, or how and it just can spiral down. I talk about it a lot with my clients as spiraling down into the chasm of doom.
Yeah.
Like, they'll be out with their friends, their girlfriends, and they're meant to have a glass of wine, but it ends up being a bottle. And then they come home and they finish off that tin of brownies they have. And then they wake up in the morning and they're like, oh, well, I've just had those brownies. It's so bad. And I may as well just have that, whatever I have for breakfast, or I'm just going to eat cake or Haribo. And that can continue for weeks.
Yeah.
This kind of spiraling down, as opposed to saying, okay, you went out with your girlfriends and you had too much wine. That's like, okay, okay, move on. Like, that's it.
Yeah,
it's
not totally. Yeah.
Did you have fun?
Yes.
Great.
I think a lot of it kind of like centers in on that self-worth and things, because I think if self-worth and self-love is kind of innate in you, like, you can see those episodes for what they are, which is just like, oh, I had fun, I made a little mistake, or, well, not even a mistake, again, you know, you what is a mistake to you is informed by your kind of relationship with food, if that makes sense. And I think I think what it is for me is that like, your relationship with food, like, there's no good and bad foods, there's only a good or bad relationship with food.
Yeah,
I think that's kind of the way to look at it. And I don't think, I mean, I know there's been a lot of talk kind of over the last few months about the, like, the clean eating scene, and, you know, some of the massively popular food blogger, like health food bloggers and things like that, and some of the rules that they have around food. But I think what's been the thing that's really freed me from it all is just kind of just thinking, it's just food, you know, it's just food. And it's like, not giving it so much power. And I mean, yeah, we all know that people who have got a chronic illness, or who have a specific kind of diet we need, or allergies, or whatever, that, like, food, you know, it can help heal them or whatever. But I think for a lot of women, it's just not helpful thinking. Do you know what I mean? I think it's, you know, let's just kind of ditch the guilt. is what I'm saying.
Massively. But yes, and focus on just enjoying your food and being grateful for it. And like, I love what you've just said, like, there's no good or bad food, there's a good or bad relationship with food. I think that's actually really key. Like, that's something that listeners want to, like, put up onto their fridge. That's like a good mantra to have. I'm going to totally quote you on that again, Laura, because I think that is actually really, really important part. So
it is,
how do you, how would you kind of, if you were working with a client who was really struggling with that kind of all or nothing mentality and all that guilt around food, where would you begin with them in terms of shifting their mindset and making changes?
So, like I said, like, mindset's totally my bag, and I get really geeky about it. So this is going to be a long answer. So what I tend to do with people is I actually go right back with them to the childhood and ask them for the first memories that they have around food, because often it's the memories that we have around food that we form when we are in our childhood and teenage years that inform some of the beliefs that we have, which inform our current behaviour. So let's say, and I mean, I'll use some examples for myself. And the thing that I'll say first of all about mindset work is it's constant. It's not something that you pick up and put down when you finish, because you never finish it. So, for example, I've been talking about mindset stuff for months. Like, I launched a course, I think it was like, last year? I think it was like last January, so I can't remember exactly when it was. And this memory only just came to me in the last few weeks. So it goes to show you can work on stuff and memories just pop up. But when I was a kid, I can remember in school, in primary school, asking for the vegetarian meal because I didn't like anything that was on the hard serving from the normal meals. I was such a fussy kid. And I can remember sitting eating cucumber for lunch off this vegetarian salad, like nibbling cucumber, because I didn't like the salad. All I liked was the cucumber. And getting told off in front of the whole school by one of the teachers, like in front of the whole school, that I'd had that meal. And it's bloody, like, when I get so, I actually get quite angry when I think about it, because if that happened to my son now, I'd go freaking apeshit, those teachers. Yeah. I would go absolutely mad. And my mum did go, into the school and talk to the teachers and stuff. But, like, that kind of memory, for me, I think, you know, kind of just thinking about, like, what did that kind of memory say to me about my relationship with food? It kind of said to me, it made me, you know, kind of fearful about what I was eating, what was right and wrong about what I was eating. You know, it made me embarrassed. And, you know, it's kind of like, you know, going through a lot of that stuff.
Yeah.
You know, like going up to my teenagers, I can remember coming last in cross country, and that really, for years and years and years, I just thought I was not a sporty person.
Yeah.
But what happened was I kind of like recognised that was a limiting belief and that it didn't have to apply to me now. And I've done 3 half marathons over the last like 5 years or something. So I definitely stuck it to that limit and belief.
Yeah,
I do like going back and looking at these patterns. And I mean, for some people, nothing major will come up, but then for others, something will really come up and just think, oh, that's like, I can really see how that's impacting me now. And often, I mean, and again, this is something that is important for our generation to consider, this is that our mothers have actually had a big impact on our relationship with food, because we've seen them dieting. We've getting the message from them that tells us that what we eat makes us or our size will make us a better person or a more worthy person. So we get all of that baggage from our mothers. And I think, I mean, I spoke at an event not long after our retreat, actually. And one of the things that I said was, you know, we are the generation that can stop this cycle of, you know, seeing, letting our daughters or our sons see us dieting and obsessing over food and sending out the message that that being thin equals being good, better person, more desirable, all of those kind of messages.
Yeah.
If that makes sense. So
yeah.
So that's kind of a lot of the stuff that I start off with doing is just going back to those memories and then kind of starting to pick apart what the limiting beliefs are that people have. And then with All or Nothing, I mean, there's different tools and things that you can use. So I've studied like neuro-linguistic programming and cognitive behavioural therapy. So there's some really good tools that you can use within those kind of modalities that can help. Also EFT, so if anyone's ever come across tapping, it's kind of a bit woo-woo and a bit weird. But it's what I say to people who I work with is that like some of this stuff is going to jive with you and some of it won't. And that's totally fine. Just find something that jives with you or doesn't. You know, journaling's a really, really good way to kind of get, you know, work through some stuff. But often I think it's just about starting like some really concrete, and you know what Kezia and I said is that we want to make sure that we give you some really clear actions from these podcasts, because a lot of the podcasts that we listen to, you don't kind of get sent away with like, right, here's one thing that you can do after this. But I think just watching the negative self-talk is a really good place to start, and trying to start putting something in. So I talk about it like, it's kind of like you've got a record playing that's just like all negative, shouty, bitchy, horrible stuff. And it's almost, if you visualise, and it sounds weird, but visualise taking the record off a record player and putting a new record on and thinking, right, this record is going to be telling me, like, it's going to remind me of how good I am, how good I am at this thing, how much of a great mother I am. It's going to remind me of all the good foods that I eat, because all of the time, I mean, what is it about, like, you know, you can eat really well, you can have like porridge with, you know, apple and cinnamon for breakfast, and you can have, you know, like a salad for lunch, and then you can have a biscuit in the afternoon. The one thing you're going to focus on is that goddamn biscuit. You're going to totally, you're going to forget about like the whole grain breakfast that you had, and, you know, the 3 portions of vegetables that you had at lunch. You're going to focus on the biscuit. Flip it. So this is another tool that I use with people, is like an evidence journal. So Like every day, just sit down and think about what your goals are, or things that you want to change, or things that you want to do more of, and think about what's the evidence of that I'm getting closer to that today. So rather than focusing on the things that you didn't do towards your goal, so let's say if your goal was, for example, to lose weight, instead of focusing on the biscuit that you had, focus on the fact that you went out for a walk this morning, that you ate a whole grain breakfast, that you had, that you've had like 7 portions of vegetables. You know, focus on that stuff, because, and I think that slowly starts to change, like, some of those thought patterns.
Yeah.
So I've just been blah, 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 blah.
No.
But I think those are some good things that help. And I mean, again, with sometimes mindset stuff kind of crosses over a little bit with emotional eating. What I would say with emotional eating is it's not an easy one, and I think, I mean, a bit of a caveat here as well, I think if anyone's kind of listening and they've got like a binge eating problem where it's severely impacting upon their life, then you need to go and seek like professional help. You know, there's no doubt about that. However, I think some people have got this kind of like lower level binge eating, overeating, emotional eating stuff going on. And I think a lot of it is come down to the fact that we don't feel our feelings anymore, or that we kind of, we're not used to feeling negative feelings. So I can even, I mean, this is interesting because I can even see this happening with Finley, is that like when you're little and you feel something negative, or you trip over and hurt yourself or something, like your parents will be like, it's all right, you know, oh, come on, jump up, you're okay, you're fine. Like, you're not encouraged to sit with the feeling that you've got.
Yeah.
And I know this kind of sounds weird because you don't, you know, no one wants to feel negative. No one wants someone they care about to feel negative. But negative feelings are a part of life. And if you don't have the skills to deal with them, you're going to start numbing them out. And, you know, people can numb them out with alcohol, with drugs, with sex, with TV, and of course with food. And it's just another way of avoiding feeling things that you don't want to feel. And something that I used to experience when I used to overeat was I would kind of have like a negative feeling that I couldn't quite put my finger on. I would just trot off to the kitchen and start eating something. But then the guilt I would feel from eating something that I shouldn't have eaten was the guilty feeling that I wanted to numb out for, and then I would eat more. And then and it was just like this horrible, horrible vicious circle, because you're just constantly kind of feeling bad, eating more, blah, blah, blah. And it's just horrible. And I think practicing sitting with the feeling is not easy, but it is probably the most effective thing that I've seen in terms of dealing with emotional eating, because you get used to kind of just dealing with those feelings in more healthy ways than just numbing them out with food. And it can be uncomfortable, because we're talking about like feeling uncomfortable stuff, and I don't want to sound like Gillian Michaels, because I think she says this as well, but it's like, it's get comfortable with being uncomfortable. And I don't mean that in like a 30-day shred kind of way. I'm sure she says like a squat way, but I mean it in like in terms of like feelings, because I think if you can start to accept and acknowledge those parts, those feelings, and it can feel, and like, I mean, I could talk about this topic for ages, because it's kind of like that shadowy part of yourself that we don't really want to kind of acknowledge, but sometimes I think we do, because we're just so used to not feeling the feelings. And I mean, sometimes even people can find that they overeat when they feel extremely happy, just because they're not used to feeling that intensity of emotion.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? I can remember, and I mean, I've got no problem saying this now because I don't do it anymore, but when I found out I was, well, not when I found out I was pregnant with Finley, it was actually after I had the first scan, when I had Finley, and there was a heartbeat, and because I was very, very nervous about the pregnancy, you know, being okay, and I had a very early scan, I was 7 weeks pregnant, and after that, I remember going to Marks and Spencer's and just buying a load of food. I was so ecstatically happy, I just didn't know how else to deal with it, and I just kind of like got like, I can remember, oh, what the hell did I get? I got a few things. I mean, I'm not talking like a 7,000 calorie binge or something. Maybe it's like one or 2,000 calories of like chocolate and sandwiches and stuff like that. But back then, that was like, that was the way that I felt I could deal with it. It was kind of really strange.
Yeah.
So I think it's like that intensity of emotion.
Yeah, I think you're right. I think our culture, it's very easy. We're often encouraged and equipped to numb, to be numb to, with as you say, drugs, alcohol, food, relationship, destructive relationships, mm-hmm. whatever, but we're not actually ever equipped with the tools of how do we process emotion,
yeah,
and the permission to process emotion.
Yeah.
So whether that's happiness of like, I am so happy right now. People that are in a good stage in life when good things happen often feel bad about feeling happy.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then they get fearful that something bad's about to happen around the corner. I've totally been there.
Yeah.
Or you have something traumatic happen,
mm-hmm.
and you just have no, like, you, like, I, for years, I've had to train myself in this, because for years someone would be like, what's wrong? And I would not be able to describe the feeling. Mm-hmm. I just knew I felt crap.
Yeah.
It was like, do I feel angry, mm-hmm. frustrated, despairing, annoyed? Am I, you know, there's a whole range of emotions that often we're just not equipped, and we're not in the practice of knowing what it is. So for years, actually, I had an emotions chart on my fridge,
mm-hmm.
that just had, like, it was like, I think it was actually made for kids, but mm-hmm. I used it, and it had something like 60 little faces,
yeah.
with different names of emotions. And at the end of the day, I would just go up to it and be like, how do I feel right now? And it'd be like, oh, I feel content, or I feel angry, or I feel happy, or really joyful, or anxious, or, you know, and I think that can sometimes be a really, learning how to pinpoint the exact emotion that you're feeling, or just engage with your emotions and not be afraid. Because I think you're right. I think a lot of this stuff is kind of quite like deep work, and is going quite deep, and it can make you feel uncomfortable. But it's learning to not be afraid of just like feeling that feeling and walking through it, if that makes sense, and coming out the end. And I talk about it a lot with clients, like digestion. So if your physical digestion, if you're not processing the food you eat, there's a lot of physical problems you get. If you get constipated, there's a whole lot of terrible things that can happen in your body if you don't process the good stuff of what you eat and get rid of the bad stuff. And it's the same with our emotions. If we never process them and take the good lessons, take the goodness that we can learn from happy situations and hard situations, but also dump the negative toxic crap that can happen from bullies, from comments from colleagues, from negative relationships. If we don't learn to literally dump them down the toilet, then it just gets stuck in our body, and it's so unhelpful moving forward. So I think you're right. I like that phrase, learning to sit with your feelings.
Yeah.
And know what you feel today won't be what you feel for the rest of your life, but it's okay to feel it today. So like, I had a day like that last week. I had various reasons, but a lot of it was a bit mysterious, but I felt so anxious all day, to a point, to a level I've not actually felt that anxious before, not like panic attacky, but I wasn't quite sure why.
Mm-hmm.
But I just learnt, I've trained myself to not freak out at the emotion and just be like, well, I feel really anxious, so I'm just going to deliberately try and watch funny things all day and listen to some funny stuff. So I think I watched like The Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
I had a massive cry on my husband when in the evening and felt a bit better, and was just like, you know what? I feel pretty awful right now, but something's going on that I don't understand. Mm-hmm. That's fine. I'm just going to go to sleep, and tomorrow I'm going to feel better. And I woke up, felt fine, and I knew it wasn't that big a deal. I just need to process something.
Yeah. I mean, something that's been really helpful for me recently is, and we could probably dedicate a whole podcast to this stuff, but it's tracking my cycle. So tracking my menstrual cycle has been really illuminating, to say the least, in terms of like certain times of the month, I know that I'm going to feel like just totally irritable and like just not, like you just don't want to be anywhere near me. And then other times of the month I'm going to feel like, sometimes I just feel extra sensitive and like I can't handle like a lot of this, especially like on social media and stuff, and some of the, you know, some of the pictures and things that are coming out of places like Syria of kids and stuff, like I cannot handle seeing them, like to the point where I will break down for the whole day because I just can't handle it. And at times like that, I know to manage my feelings and to manage like how I, like the stuff that I need to process, if that makes sense. So I think it's part, you know, getting to know that kind of part of you as well, I think can be quite helpful. But I think it's, as you can probably imagine from what we've spoken about, you know, mindset stuff isn't simple, but it is worthwhile getting to grips with it, because the impact that the positive impact that it can have on your life is really huge. And I think it does just start, I think a really easy place to start probably is just about thinking about the self-talk that you've got going on. And I'll probably say as well, if we can sneak in like another thing to focus on, but would be like labels on food, like good and bad labels on food.
Mm-hmm.
I think that's a really good one to ditch.
Yeah, I think so.
Do you know what I mean? And like I say, it's not all black and white, because I know some people have got, you know, specific health challenges and things that they're working towards, which might make some foods, you know, better off not being on the plate. But like, even if you just think about the language that you use.
Yeah. Yeah, I think, and I work, cause a lot of the clients I work with do have some rubbish digestion stuff going on, mm-hmm. or like a whole host of quite physical symptoms. Mm-hmm. I have a lot of a blend of that. And so for some people, it's not helping them to eat loads of refined sugar, mm-hmm. if they've got a pathogenic bacteria in their gut. But it mm-hmm. is. It's how you talk about the food. It's not that, like, refined sugar is the devil, and mm-hmm. like it should never pass our lips, because it's gonna, like, that's okay. But it's thinking about, okay, well, if you know, having, it's about, you can still have boundaries
mm-hmm.
in place, but it's all those negative labels of, like, oh well, you know, this is just like crappy food, or whatever it is, or it's more the emotion linked to it.
Yeah,
like, it's still the same thing. You know, like for me, I know eating mm-hmm. gluten doesn't do me any good, but sometimes I do eat it,
mm-hmm.
but I don't feel bad about it.
Yeah,
I make an informed choice. I'm like, well, I might feel a bit bloated tomorrow if I eat gluten, and then that's that. So yeah. I think it's true. I think the self-talk, being aware of that,
mm-hmm.
and being aware of the labels that you give food, is it good or bad, is it like evil, or something, it's like spinach saintly and chocolate is just like the devil.
I think as well, I mean, a massive, just before we kind of start wrapping up, a massive like dimension that it had for me was a good few years ago, and I've spoke about this in blog posts and stuff, was that I felt like I was being a better person when I ate good food. So there was a massive link between food and morality that was really unhelpful for me. And again, this kind of bridges over. I mean, it's a bit tricky when you get into stuff like people who eat vegan for ethical reasons and stuff like that. But for me, I really felt like I was, because I ate a perfectly clean diet, like, I was a better person. Like, mm-hmm. you know, look at me on average, because I'm eating a vegan clean diet. Do you know what I mean? Yeah. And I feel like such a complete cow, like, total bitch when I see it. But that was kind of, and to be honest, and that's why, that's personally why I don't particularly appreciate the whole, the way that clean eating is portrayed, like, and the wellness stuff is portrayed, like, on that, you know, how I'm, you know, the Instagram.
Yes. Yeah,
people. I don't like that, because I think it kind of makes, and like I said, to me it was about, like, my core belief was that I was not worthy, so the things I was doing to make me feel more worthy, I'm kind of like jumping around here a little bit, but I do have a point, I promise. So going back, I had an experience when I was very, very young, that someone said something to me when I was younger that made me feel really worthless, and like I wasn't as good as another member of my family because she was thinner and more active. So for me growing up, the way that manifested was that for me to feel like I had more worth, I became extremely restrictive in terms of what I would eat and what I wouldn't eat. And I gained my self-worth from this whole idea that, oh, I'm eating a clean vegan diet, I'm a better person. And that was massively self-destructive, because I lost too much weight. I ended up with hypothalamic amenorrhea, where my period disappeared for 2 years, and all sorts of other problems. So that's kind of a mindset thing. That's just an example for you guys in terms of how the mindset thing worked for me. So there's lots of different facets to it. And it's, I could probably talk about this for hours.
I'm sure we'll talk about it again.
But I think just for this podcast, I think a couple of good things to focus on, just to quickly sum up, is first of all, think about that negative self-talk. Even visualize change, like physically changing the record in your head. Mm-hmm. Something that's going to be a lot, you know, that's actually going to build you up and not pull you down. Think about having a best friend in your head rather than having like your worst enemy in your head. Sometimes it's even worth actually naming it, so you can actually name your inner critic or your inner bitch, if you like, and if that helps kind of distinguish that part of you from yourself. Also, I think the other thing is, what was the other thing that we said?
Oh, we talked about labelling foods.
Labelling foods, that was it. Something else. Yeah, so labelling foods, so ditching the good and bad labels on foods, I think is a really good place to start as well. So, yeah so hopefully that hasn't been too...
No, it's good. And the other thing I would add to that is to add in, add in as
much as positive
stuff. Yeah, encourages that kind of self-worth and builds that up. So...
some people like affirmations and stuff.
Could be affirmations, could be the EFT thing, because that's a good blend.
It's a really good way to do
saying the negative and following up with something positive. Mm-hmm. It could be just making sure you laugh often. Really random, but that's really good for switching your state. If you get stuck in that spiral, and just being able to do that. But those are some really helpful, I think, actionable stuff to get started, because mm-hmm. I think it is a process with your mindset, and it's something that you always are kind of developing and learning more about. But I think those are really good places to start. Look at your self-talk, look at your talk and the judgments you have around food, what's kind of going on there. And then I know both Laura has loads more resources on her website, and I've got more in mind if you want to find out more. And I'm sure we'll do this again, because there's loads of great strategies that you can do that we've both tried that have really helped shift your mindset. But you've just got to start with one step. Mm-hmm. Guys, this doesn't happen overnight. This is like one small step every day that shifts your mindset.
Yeah. I mean, like I said, I really do think it's a it's lifelong work. Mindset stuff, because I think it's and this affects, and to be honest, when you start talking about mindset, it really kind of explodes out into all different areas of your life. But I think just being open to it. I think as well, just kind of by accepting that it's lifelong work, you take some of the pressure off being trying to fix everything. Like, you don't have to fix yourself. Do you know what I mean? It's like just do a little, just try to focus on little things at a time, and it's slowly going to change.
Yeah, so true. So thank you everyone for joining us for our first episode of season 2.
I know, how exciting.
We will be back shortly, so with your next episode in the next week. So make sure you head over to iTunes and leave a review, and we'll maybe give you a shout out on the show. If you think this episode will be helpful to one of your friends or colleagues or anything like that, then do share it with them or tag them in, and make sure you head over to Whole Healthy Live to check out our brand new Fancy Pants website.
Yes, I know. That'd be so cool. Right then, guys, see you soon.
Bye.